It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Chill, baby, chill. 4 o'clock hour. Let's get fired up. Brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyer. 766-1400 is the number. That's the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Number 775. That's what you need to dial in the north. 775-766-1400. Battleborn Injury Lawyer's offices in Reno and four here in southern Nevada. John Von Tobel is in. He, of course, from JVT Saturday Football Preview Show on ESPN Las Vegas at the Westgate. He's over on 1230 VSiN, the game as well. Big four time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
I like when we do story time, stuff that's not necessarily up our alley. Why were you out at a library dedication ceremony? Is this a Von Tobel connection? Because you're one of the first 100 families of, you know, from the your tool store and all that? What's going on here?
No, I'm actually, I don't think I've been like outright with this with everybody, but I'm back at school. Hmm. So I'm working on an advanced degree. And part of what I needed to work on was a story about our public libraries, and there was a new opening that was out there, so I wanted to check it out over on the west side on North MLK, and it was really cool. Now, it's a state-of-the-art building, which is pretty cool. I actually didn't have time to go in for the actual tour because I had to go to my job, so I'm going to go tomorrow in the morning to kind of check out the inside, but it's kind of interesting to be in an area of the, like, I'm never really on the west side ever. I'm just driving through it because I have to drive in that area to get to work or leave work. But the community impact of things, like, not to be too cheesy. So I go for the grand opening. I'm expecting 10 people, like, walk up and just, hey, we're open. Like, go ahead and check it out. I wasn't expecting hundreds of people, news crews. I had to park a half mile away and walk up to go and check out all of these speakers that were there as well. And the odd, not to be too positive because this is a negative show, but the unbridled joy that was emanating from all the people that were there to have a new library in this community, the impact it could have on everybody out there. Dude, I did not realize that this would be something like that impactful. It's actually kind of eye-opening how much something like a library can have a positive impact on a community.
What was the best story you heard or quote you got in terms of, you know, someone who'd been in the community for a long time and they're like, this is great, man. We've been fighting for something like this to come to our neighborhood.
Yeah, a lot of it had to do with some of the and I don't have my notes from me, so I'd have to pull the actual names. But a lot of the stories about how, you know, single mom who has to use the library to help out with the kids, whether it's entertainment or things like that, and how run down old libraries were and now getting a new one and what that means. And also the things that you could use and the services they offer. I saw somebody signing up for Medicaid there, you know? Like, there's more than just books and computers. You know, you have all these different things that help out in terms of support groups. I was really surprised. It was a pretty impactful thing. It's also a nice library.
Yes.
What?
I was going to have some comments to make on trying to read about the opening of the library. I feel like sometimes that the opening of something that's great for the community, community events, maybe shouldn't be behind a paywall. But we're all in it to make money. Yeah. So number three.
Number three.
Maybe you can post your story when you finalize it for school up on the web. That'll be free. Please?
It will be.
College football. We got big news with Sherrone Moore out at Michigan with cause. We'll get to that story in a second. I don't think Jason Eck. Well, I know Jason Eck's not on my list of 17 candidates, but I do believe the New Mexico coach is a fast riser, will be at a bigger stop at some point when he chooses to go. I saw a coach of the year finalist, Eddie Robinson, coach of the year finalist list, and he's not on it. Shaky.
It's ridiculous. I mean,
some of the coaches, we have to put Kurt Cignetti, Ryan Day, and Kirby Smart on a coach of the year list?
I think Cignetti.
Well, I guess what are the parameters for the job? Is it those who surprised?
Sure.
Or those who achieved at the highest level?
Right. And that to me is like, Cignetti, I think, makes more sense than a Ryan Day. I don't want to say that Ryan Day just rolls the ball out, but come on. Like, he's got a very full cupboard of assets. It's a very talented team. They were dominant throughout the season, so they deserve some credit. But the straight-up coaching job at a – I don't want to be an elitist here. A spot like New Mexico, given the recent history of the program, outside of what Bronco Mendenhall did last year, which was just 5 wins, like, come on now. You've got to at least acknowledge that Eck did a tremendous job. And I think I tweeted it out, which was, this list is proof that the people that cover the sport don't watch the sport. There's no way that any of these writers who are involved in this process know about the job that Jason Eck does.
The resurrection of New Mexico football, getting crowds back out there. Other group of six and maybe less than big names who were part of the Coach of the Year finalist list, Bob Chesney at JMU, now at UCLA. Tony Elliott did a hell of a job at Virginia.
Yep.
Mike Elko, I mean, good job. You know, again, I don't want to penalize guys for having amazing coffers like Joey McGuire at Texas Tech. Great. Jim Mora at UConn, that's back-to-back years, man. Yeah. He's been really good, and he got himself a great new job at Colorado State. Clark Lee, this could be a couple-of-year award at Vanderbilt. He's done a hell of a job.
Yeah, my issue is more with some of the big names at the top.
Yeah.
Like, you could put – if just winning a ton of games is, like, the barometer for you to win to vote for Coach of the Year, then you could put Ryan Day up there almost every single year. Because of the talent they have, they're going to win, like, 10-ish games almost every season. Give guys like X some credit for what he has done for that program. Maybe it's an anti-big guy thing.
I mean, I don't think big guys are treated fairly all the time.
No. They just don't want to vote for him because he's a bigger dude.
I saw, and I wish I could find the – I saw a tweet about 3 weeks ago annihilating Josh Heupel as not being the face that a place like Tennessee wants running its program because he's fat and has a double chin.
A place like Tennessee?
I don't know. That was the logic.
It's an illustrious program.
He looks slovenly. The person's like, dress for success. Get yourself in shape. You're a slob.
I will say, I kind of find it funny, the dynamic, because I think X in this category too,
yeah,
where fat guys are good offensive coaches. Because I feel like for some reason, like, you should, yeah. Like,
they're just sitting, yeah, in front of the screen.
Right.
Just snacking.
Yeah, but like the just the juxtaposition of a big fat guy coaching up an offense that is, like, really built on speed and dynamic and, like, the dynamicism and all this stuff, explosiveness. And then you look at the play caller, and it's this soft chin big guy that's, like, just calling up plays left and right and slicing up opposing defenses. I feel like the fat guys should be good defensive coaches, but usually it's the other way around. Like, usually defensive guys are, like, the well-cut and in-shape dudes. It is rare you get a Dave Canales in today's day and age.
I don't like that guy.
Dave Canales.
I told you, I always get comments at home anytime he's up on the screen.
Yeah.
The significant other is always like, he's pretty good looking.
Oh, really?
All right.
Make sure you tell him about tell her about the book. I don't think she'll like him that much.
What's the book? He's a jerk?
Oh, no. You don't know. Remember this?
No.
He wrote a book about, I think, his addiction to pornography almost ruined his marriage or something like that. Yeah, yeah. He was a porno freak for a while. He's come to grips with it, though.
I am correct, because I was alive when this happened, and he's younger than me. Josh Heupel was a high-level quarterback. He's just kind of lost it. He's out of shape.
Yeah.
Speaking of being slovenly, this would be, I think this is insulting. And for the audience, if you are a finely dressed individual, do we know a bulkier person who is a good dresser? Or are most of us slobs?
I think I dress well.
I just rolled you in.
I was going to say, I think I dress well.
I'm trying to dress better.
Yeah.
But I lost a little weight.
I mean, you go with the polo and the sport coat when you're working at UNLV games.
I've been wearing more of the button-downns because I can.
Well, you don't even have to do button-downs. T-shirt, like plain-colored T-shirt, is even better under the sport coat than the polo.
I can start ripping out a tie.
Yeah.
I've increased my pants budget. I've got a lot of pants now.
The problem
I'm mostly going still with sneakers because I'm old and I like to be comfortable.
You can still pull it off. But the problem with being a big guy, too, is that when you dress nice, when you go with the tie, it's hard to find shirts that'll go around that neck. Mm. And then you got to go with the single button undone or whatever it is and then tighten the tie up. Like, it's not a good look.
Do you feel like we're also limited in terms of colors? Like, we're not going pastel. It's
okay.
Like, it's to go with much lighter colors as a big fella.
I got a hot take on this.
It doesn't really
I got a hot take
do
on
the
this.
Physique the right way. Now, I'm sure there are people driving around right now who are a little bit bigger guys. I'm talking about guys because Jason Eck, the New Mexico coach, is an unmade bed.
Yeah.
Josh Heupel does have a double chin, and he kind of does look sloppy.
Andy Reid. Yeah.
I mean, he stole the approach from him. Actually, who I stole it from was Sports Pig. Then Magnum, who, yep, you know, we love Chapman, who's now in Japan, the big fella Hawaiian shirt, it's just comfortable.
You can't do that, though. But my I got a lot of takes here. First off, Matt LaFleur as an offensive guy, you're too skinny. You got to get fat, and then you'll win a Super Bowl. That's how this is going to work here. Okay. The second, though, is
he's another one that annoys me, not to jump in on you, but I swear to God he gets his hair cut like every 3 days.
Yes. Very good. That's actually, they say you should do it every 2 weeks, I think, something like that, 2 or 3 weeks. I probably should. I have noticed a thing with big guy clothes. Look, up against it already, being a big guy. Mm-hmm. We don't need patterns and trees and birds and, like, all sorts of dots and all sorts of just different nonsense. Can you just produce some big guy single-colored shirts? It's not that hard. But for some reason, like, have you ever seen commercials for Shaq's clothing line of big extra tall? Like, it's just plaid and trees and all sorts of patterns. Like, they're already up against it. You don't need to start making it worse.
I feel like just getting a black shirt, once you get to, like, XL, double X, or bigger, then they're like, all right, that's double the price.
Yeah.
It's a lot more material, and we know you're desperate because you're trying to slim yourself with a black shirt. Here you go, fatty. Pay double. There is a fat tax.
Just black shirts?
Just black shirts, yes.
Oh, does that mean white shirts are cheaper?
Well, what? I mean, I've talked about it before. I think I've told you this. My jealousy of Mark Davis, he's 70 years old. The guy's wearing a white jacket, white shirt, white pants. Who can wear all that white at that age?
He probably has a lot of changes of outfits, I would assume.
Oh, I don't think so. I thought MD Apparel Insider, Willie Ramirez, was saying he's got, like, he has, like, a lot of the same outfit.
No, that's what I'm saying, though.
He's got a lot of... Maybe he changes the t-shirt underneath. I don't think he changes... He's got a bunch of those white jackets.
He looks like he gets crumbs on himself a lot, though. So he probably changed.
I got a couple of white sweatshirts as freebies. Yeah. I'm like, I can't wear these. I wore one of them, and, like, right off the bat, I there's some kind of stain.
Well, I'm
walking around in fear the whole time.
The thing that I've noticed with white shirts...
By the way, sure, run more coming up.
Yeah. The thing that I've noticed with white shirts is the pits. They get, like, if you wear them enough...
They get stained.
Yeah, they get, like, you know, the natural pit stain to it, your deodorant, things, all that stuff. Like, you can't wear them too long.
Boy, that was a good touche on Canales, though, to go back about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
He had some issues in the past.
Look up the book. He's worked through it.
I mean, I'm going to blurt it out. I'll say it. If you're that hot, a porn addiction?
I mean, sometimes you got to go.
Just go get the real thing. You're an attractive guy. What's going on here? That's another study. I wonder if most... Well...
No, don't do that. That's not fair.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
No, you're right.
Assuming that all big guys are addicted to porn?
No, we need studies. We have a lot of studies that we're requesting today. But
You'd be surprised.
Back to the original topic. Josh Heupel, not going to be suitable for Michigan.
That's right.
Too beefy. Too double chinny.
Doesn't look like it. Too soft of a chin.
So Sherrone Moore's out. We're joking about porn addiction. I don't know what he did. We're hearing inappropriate relationship. I find when these cases come down that oftentimes there was an agenda that people were kind of looking to fit in. Now, this could be, like, really, really serious. It could be something where, you know, it's like bordering on a criminal with a subordinate. I don't know. But it does seem a little fishy. I'll leave it at that because I don't want to put my foot in my mouth and we find out this guy's a horrific human being. But bottom line is they have an opening. We're going to bring in a Michigan fan, Michigan man kind of, Adam Hill in about an hour to get reaction on Michigan now needing a football coach at the very end of this whole cycle. It's crazy.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, so I have Dan Mullen 14th on the Michigan list. This is no insult to Dan Mullen. I think he would do a great job. Sherrone Moore's out. Something's going on at Michigan. So they need a head coach. It's crazy. It's a top five job in the country. And as John said in hour number one, it's not arrogant for Michigan people to look at everyone else in college football and go, we want your guy.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone. And that includes, like, I would make a call to Dan Lanning. I don't know what his ultimate wishes are. Oregon's a great job. So I named a bunch of guys who either you thought wouldn't move or maybe Michigan wouldn't be interested in. The names I threw out were Dabo Swinney, Steve Sarkisian, Dan Lanning, Lincoln Riley, we just brought up. I mentioned Kalani Sitake. Okay, here's the rest of my list. And we did talk about Kalen DeBoer,
Mm-hmm.
Timing-wise, if Alabama was out, like, there's no rush on this job. I mean, you don't want to go until, like, the middle of January. Well, I guess there is a rush because the freaking transfer portal.
Oh, there you go. No, you got to get this done. Yeah. Transfer portal's opening up next month.
You can't wait 10 days?
No, you got to get this done now.
So anyone who's playing right now.
I mean, you're rooting.
Bowl game doesn't matter.
No.
But anyone who's in the playoff.
Yeah.
You can't touch.
No. I mean, in theory, though, who would you want in the playoff? In reality.
Well, Kalen DeBoer.
Yes, right. Kalen. I'm saying, though, like anybody else, though, you can go and do your due diligence in the meantime while you wait for DeBoer. Because I don't think there's anybody else in there. What, Brent Venables? I mean, any of these other teams that we're thinking of, you're not going to or don't want them.
I'll give you real candidates, I think.
Okay.
This is who I think are real candidates. I think Mike Elko would be a real candidate. Now, he is fat. We'll move past all that stuff.
College is fine.
College is fine.
Yeah.
Legit candidate. I can't stand him because he's a holier than thou guy. But I think he'd blend in at Michigan. Eli Drinkwitz.
Yeah.
God, he's annoying, though.
Yeah, he is.
Is anyone going to mention that he just signed a deal upwards of like $10 million a year, and he was the one 4 years ago who was trying to shame players for making money because they're making more than his brother who's a doctor? He should come out and say every day, I make way more than my brother does, and my brother actually matters and does things that are important. I'm ashamed of myself.
College football matters, Steve. Yeah.
Mario Cristobal.
Just get out of here.
Not a match? Or just not that good?
I don't know.
He's in the playoff!
Yeah, you know what? That's
unbelievable
fair.
Recruiter.
He is. He's also every year got that loss on his resume.
Hmm.
You're going to trust him in the big game against Ohio State every year?
I think Lincoln Riley is a good candidate. And I do think Link would rather be in the Big Ten proper than be 2,000 miles away.
Yes, I do wonder. I don't want to be this guy, but I will be for a second. Is he really a fit for, like, Michigan? What he wants to run and what he wants to do with his offense, does that matter? Because I fought back against that.
This is a great topic.
Because here's the thing. People misread that with Oregon, but they didn't realize that Lanning was actually a dude that, like, built from the trenches, running game, like, they're a physical team, very good, whatever it is. Lincoln Riley's teams, granted, again, maybe some of the road trips, he's not done well on the road in the Big Ten. How much of that has to do with what he wants to run with some of his schemes? And would that really work at Michigan?
Jed Fish at Washington has connections to Michigan. He's actually a Northeast guy. He's from Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, he's also a Florida alum, and he's never been serious. He was never seriously in contention for that.
He also at times, this is going to sound weird, he doesn't seem like football guy.
Sure.
Like big, imposing football guy.
Yeah. I just don't, I always find it weird when guys like that aren't really in contention for certain jobs that you would think they are, and that's something that kind of throws me off a little bit for Jed Fish. Like who the Gators went and got? John Summerall, right? Like, we never really heard Jed Fish, Florida alum, in real talks for that, and that always kind of weirds me out.
Jesse Minter.
Okay.
Chargers DC, but is it too connected to Harbaugh?
Maybe a little too much. But is he considered a Michigan guy?
He might also be a lock for a top three. Well, they're not going to be top three organizations, sure. But a top three choice for a lot of NFL jobs. Nothing's floating your boat so far.
No. Well, you haven't named my guy yet.
Well, I'm going to give you my two guys.
Okay.
Clark Lee at Vandy.
Yep. He was on my list.
And I don't think Michigan has to go with giant name, grab someone else's power forward coach. I think a perfect match from an attitude standpoint, recruiting, coaching.
Excited.
Would be Spencer Danielson.
Really?
I can't believe that he didn't reach the SEC this year. Or UCLA didn't talk to him. He's actually a Southern California guy.
Yeah.
I think he's awesome.
Okay.
And I think the way he carries himself
yeah.
is very kind of Michigan-y.
Sure. I've been lucky enough to have two interviews with him face-to-face. Super nice dude, charismatic. I think I can kind of get it in terms
there's
of what
an
he
air,
says.
There's an yeah. air of authority from a guy sure. who's like 37.
Yeah, I can get that.
You're like, really?
Well, no, because I didn't think you liked him. I don't remember you.
No, no. I
think it's more a Boise SID thing.
Oh,
I'm
I kind of know what I'm getting with Danielson.
Sure, okay.
They also, when you talk to certain coaches, if they don't know you, they're not going to open up as much.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a tough nut to crack, but guess what? It's Michigan.
Yeah. Well, he also, I mean, to an extent, he pulled one out of his hat, but he deserves credit for getting this done this year.
Yes.
Like, that's.
And maybe, you know, maybe I'm too close to the fire on this one, or, you know, prisoner of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he's done there has been nuts.
Overcoming Maddox Madsen to win a Mountain West championship.
Who's your guy?
Kenny Dillingham, Arizona State.
Interesting. You know, he's too mouthy.
I mean, he might be.
He's
I think
honest.
That's kind of interesting, though.
Yeah.
And
I think it's a cool approach.
Yeah. And what's obviously floating over all this is any time is the fact that Bryce Underwood, their star quarterback, who has some really strong upside, was essentially lured to Michigan by powers beyond Strom Moore. So does he stay? And if he doesn't, well, Dillingham's quarterback, Sam Leavitt, just entered the transfer portal. It'd be a pretty nice marriage to bring over to Michigan. If all else, you know, all the bleep hits the fan and Underwood decides to leave. Because, you know, right now, I mean, the crazy part about college football now, and this happened behind the scenes, but even more so now it's up front. You talk about Michigan calling folks. You don't think Bryce Underwood's people are getting calls right now?
Oh, yeah.
I think, did he come down? Can you look this up? Are you looking up right now? He was down to Michigan and LSU?
Okay.
Was that what it was?
I think so, yes.
And, I mean, I don't think Lane Kiffin would ever do anything underhanded to get somebody away from another program. So maybe I'm just barking up the wrong tree.
Do I look at coaching candidate lists that have been put out? People have had a couple hours now.
Okay.
I don't know that these are going to be super sourced.
John Gruden.
Well, John Gruden was mentioned on the national show.
Mike Tomlin's going to be mentioned.
Mike Tomlin is – that's ridiculous.
Why would Mike Tomlin ever want to go to college? Yeah. Mike Tomlin can't even maintain a straight face when talking to reporters when they ask him questions. You really think he's going to sit there and spend his time courting teenagers and early 20-somethings every single week? There's no way.
A list on USA Today, Jed Fish. As a candidate, Josh Heupel,
double chin.
Jesse Minter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, John Harbaugh, I'm sure, is on there.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
He's not on this list, but that is really interesting. But the Harbaugh tie.
Right.
Unfortunately, Jim just operated like such a dirtbag.
John's pure.
He got him what they wanted.
Yeah. John would never do that.
They're not going to give the title back.
Strong name.
Clark Lee.
Oh.
Kalen DeBoer.
Oh.
Mike Elko.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Prom. My list was done at 2:55 Pacific time. This one just came out. This is a list of eight names in no particular order, but the eighth that I did not read.
Brent Brennan.
Dan Mullen.
Oh, really? It's on the list?
Now, this could be by, if it's by Dan Wolkin, this story, but he doesn't write for USA Today anymore. That's right. Yahoo.
I don't believe so, yeah.
Let's see if someone who's sourced. I don't know who Paul Meyerberg is. He might be a fine young man as a writer. I don't know. So there's some names.
What about Barry Odom? I've got people in the Odom camp. I'll reach out. I'll ask.
Is that right? You have people in the camp? Damn, I want to talk Jeff Choate, but I don't want to use the segue here. Are you down on Mullen because of the job the UNLV staff did in the title game? I saw that you were kind of irked that there wasn't more criticism.
Yes.
I know I saw you tweet out, hey, I didn't enjoy the game, the way that game was coached against Boise.
No, I don't think it was. I thought some of the decision-making was head-scratching at best. So I think – so you've opened me up to two directions here. So I think the simple one to put a bow on is, no, I didn't like the decision-making. The third and 25 run, what is that? I don't understand what the logic is there.
We were all – on the broadcast, we were all kind of flabbergasted. I wasn't speaking at the time, but I looked up and I'm like, wait, this is two down territory.
You got to
get half of it at least.
Yes.
You got to throw downfield. And then Caleb Herring was beside himself. He's like, I don't know what just happened.
Yes. So the third and 25, the drive before that, if I remember correctly, they had a fourth and four at about their own 35-ish yard line, somewhere in that range on ballparking both. They decide to kick it away. Again, you're in the top of the fourth quarter here. It's a two-possession game. At this point, your defense had kind of been giving you a little bit of a chance, but we know how leaky that group has been. I think you've got to go for it there. I just don't really like that. Like those decision making, those decisions made in a game that is win or go home, essentially. And by the way, I don't know how much you guys talked about it. I think I mentioned it to you that Wednesday. What drove me even more nuts, Steve, is like it or not, there was the tiniest of chances that that win against Boise State gets you to the college football playoff. Who knows where the committee had you and an 11-2 team, a Mountain West champ with a win over Boise, avenging one of your two losses, with a committee that did not like James Madison all year long. Who knows what they want to do with you there? So that, I think that drove me nuts. But no, my, this actually, I will invoke his name for a second time. This actually brings me back to the Odom regime very briefly, because what drove me nuts about some of the discourse, and I did disagree vehemently with Caleb, but you know, it's Twitter. I didn't want to just go type paragraphs back and forth. At what point do we stop as a community, as a fan base, going, oh, shucks, it was so good to be in the Mountain West Championship game again. This is so much fun. Like, at what point do you start to have expectations that you should win those games and be upset instead of what I saw, which was, man, it was so great to be back there again. Like, no, at some point beat these fools and want to beat them.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
I was thinking the same thing in the aftermath that things had opened up this year in general in the CFP. UNLV could have been there.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
So much stuff going on. One last thing on Michigan for now, and we'll revisit this again. Sherrone Moore, head coach of Michigan, fired. That job is open. Headline that just came down a couple minutes ago. Ex-Michigan coach Sherrone Moore reportedly detained by police after being fired for inappropriate relationships. So those are the latest details we have. Michigan will be okay. They're going to be able to pull it together. It's late in the cycle. They'll find a good coach. It is crazy when in a bunch of these situations that coaches signed a class and then whether they decided to leave like Brennan Marion or in the case of Michigan, they fired the coach, that all these signees are like, wait, what the hell just happened? Like, do I have to stay here? That's interesting. We know the portal is going to be a big deal for a lot of these new coaches to try to pull things together if they don't have a full recruiting class. And frankly, you want to be old, right? Most of these programs want to be old. What Jeff Choate said the other day, he's the Nevada coach, and we're on in Reno right now. I wonder what the reaction was there. We're going to talk to Shannon Kelly tomorrow from Nevada Sportsnet. What he said the other day, what was publicized the most on social media was a little bit weird. This is the comment that you're going to see most of the time with Jeff Choate talking about what Nevada football can do for players.
You know what happens when you come to Nevada? You go get $1.4 million to go to Oregon if you're developed the right way. A guy that couldn't play consistently at the University of Texas got drafted when he came here. A guy that was a junior college guy, a walk-on, ended up becoming a first-team Mountain West player and then went and got a bag at West Virginia. A guy that was kind of a times player at Butte College comes here, gets developed, and becomes a first-team All-Mountain West player. A journeyman safety from the Big Sky Conference comes here and becomes a second-team All-Mountain West player. Like, that's one of the things that we're selling.
Okay, I saw your reaction on Twitter. Quote, come here so you can leave later. That's a wild pitch.
Now, I will fully admit that I was in my rivalry bag there, as I love to call our wonderful neighbors up north, the Hicks up north. It's a rivalry thing. So I was being a little hyperbolic. I understand the pitch for the most part. It is, I don't know if you call it refreshing or maybe it is wild to kind of hear out loud, this is what programs in this area now, like Nevada, have to do, is to kind of pitch a sort of development. Hey, man, you fell from the heights and you're looking for somewhere, come here and get better and maybe you can go somewhere else. Or, hey, man, like if you're a freshman and they're not really noticing you, come here and put it on film and then you can go somewhere else. It is a logical thing and likely a conversation that is happening at many programs out there. I mean, hell, UNLV is doing it to an extent. They've had a lot of Power 5 cast-offs come out here, and they've developed them, and they've done well with them. I don't know if the full plan for a – I shouldn't say a program like UNLV, but I will. A program that has the aspirations that UNLV has to, hey, you can leave when we're done here. I think they want to keep them because their goal is like the Big 12, obviously, or whatever it is. Right. But I think that is the state of college football. And I maybe or maybe not was just poking fun a little bit at Nevada there.
Saying the quiet part out loud.
Yeah.
But it is the back end of it's the uncomfortable part. Like, hey, come here and you can get money somewhere else.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's verbalized in the original recruiting pitch. But I do. I totally understand, hey, it didn't work out up there. Come here, you're going to get to play. Or, hey, you didn't get recruited real heavily out of high school or JUCO. Come here. Maybe you can get there. Here's more chode.
I do think that resonates. Like, where can I go from there? Especially for some of these guys that are going, hey, it didn't work out for me, stop one. I need to go somewhere where I can grind and work and be developed. And part of that is playing. Now, part of the problem is now, some of these guys get paid so much to watch people play football that they're really not interested in working that hard. I'm not interested in those guys. That's what I love about some of these JUCO guys. They're hungry. They're humble. They want to work. A lot of times, the guys that we had success with, especially on the line this last year, Jack and Zach, elevating from the FCS level and really playing up a level for them and showcasing what they can do. That development piece is a big part of what we sell. Opportunity, development, and relationships, you know, outside of all the other stuff.
Sorry, the middle of that comment.
That's where you lose me.
Well, I usually bristle at, hey, guys are getting paid to watch football. Do they even really want to get better and play football? I'm actually coming to that thought a little more on certain players. I think it is a dangerous game that is being played. When someone goes to a place, say they're, you know, a high-level recruit, the school wants to retain them for a second year. I don't know, let's say they make 400 grand in 2 years. That can take away some of the edge. Not with everyone.
Right.
I think it's the job of the coach to go, hey, what did that money do to this kid? Does he still want it?
Sure.
Like, was part of the reason that he didn't develop in 2 years at whatever Power Four that he did get a little settled, that he doesn't want it? And I do think there are some kids that is happening to.
Can I argue, though, then that's your nature in general? Like, if you're player X who is of such a mental state that just a little bit of money will stop you from working hard, wasn't that you the whole time? And wouldn't thus working for free when everybody else is and being pushed also then expose the fact that you're not a hard worker? I mean, I just don't think that.
I'm not saying it hasn't happened in the past, because sure. I think the prime example is we talk about just the competition level raise when you go to college, especially if you're a big fella.
Yeah.
Like, and you dominated people because you were 6'5 and 300, and then everyone's 6'5, 300, but they're mean.
Yeah.
And, like, you never faced this before, and all of a sudden now you're like, okay, I don't like this.
Right. No,
but it is absolutely, it really is, it's becoming more similar. When you start paying people, it becomes more similar to the NFL and the NFL draft. And, hey, at the next level, are they going to want it? Is the money just going to be enough for them, and they're just going to kind of settle into being part of the program and mm-hmm. not bust their ass to become a great player? You do have to be really careful who you recruit. Your boy Eck, I don't know what he's going to do this year, but your guy Eck liked a lot of those FCS guys, yep. So I think he took the same attitude that Choate did, and Choate's from FCS. He's been at FBS, but they look at it like, hey, this guy's going to be hungry. He wants to move up. He's going to keep fighting. Mm-hmm. There has always been that question of guys moving down. Either they never had it, they were over-recruited, maybe they don't want it, and then for most of them, I think playing time changes everything.
Yeah. Or the negative side, right? I think some of them transfer down and think they're going to be the dude. It's like, of course, like I'm this big dude. One of them sticks out. Who is the big 6'6" receiver that was here, I think was under Arroyo, used to play at Indiana, he transferred in.
Yeah, I remember.
He didn't really stick around. Like, no. He looked like a kid who thought, like, of course, like, I'm going to come out here and dominate, and then really couldn't get reps, couldn't beat guys out, never played. I think you get that at every level. I honestly think, listening to Choate, what's surprising is, to your point about the quiet part out loud, you don't want to necessarily announce, hey, everybody, we're not paying you. You know? Like, yeah. That is something where you have those conversations behind closed doors. In the new look conference, you know, I'm not going to pretend to know the NIL situation of all these teams that are coming in now for the new Mountain West, but look, you're going to be competing in a new conference with a bunch of different programs from around the country. Like, that's not something you want to put out there. I don't think, at least.
Yeah.
Also, I know we've passed this already, but since we're talking about Choate, the Ford F-150 comment was ridiculous.
Why?
He makes over $1 million a year.
He's a regular guy. He's a laborer.
the ridiculous, like, I'm a Ford F-150 guy. Like, last time I checked, you could probably buy two right now. No problem. Cash down. Stop.
So we mostly like what he says?
I understand it, yeah. But am I going to use it as an opportunity to make fun of that program? Absolutely. It does kind of stink, though. I mean, for a program like that, I mean, I have fond memories of watching Colin Kaepernick and those Nevada teams being really competitive and good. Right? The pistol offense and how great they were. And now all of a sudden, it's just like, dude, we are dying for any scraps of talent to come out here to help us out.
We could do some things in the state of Nevada, in many ways led by our public servants, to actually be aggressive. I've been really disappointed the last 5 years as the gap between the haves and the have-nots has grown and different states have been aggressive, and really there's no one been at the forefront to try to fund both of the schools, try to close the gap, try to be creative. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of weak. Now private equity is coming to college football. Utah is going to work a private equity deal. Now this one's interesting. Does this person really care, or are they just attention-seeking? On the Utah deal with, I think it's Otro, right? A 51-49 partnership with Utah Athletics. A Congressman, Michael Baumgartner. Congress will be taking a hard look at the tax-exempt status of universities that enter into private equity deals. If you want to act like a non-public entity, you better be ready to be treated like one. First two comments on this guy's tweet. Do churches next?
Yeah.
Next one. What about churches? Which then brings the state of Utah into a real good situation. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
University of Utah could be facing some difficulties in terms of taxes because, I mean, this is a real business. But BYU wouldn't? Okay.
Right. I mean,
in a lot of ways, Utah is... I mean, they're at the forefront of this. This is going to happen. It's already kind of been happening, but it's not announced publicly, not at Utah, but other places. In a lot of ways, Utah is just reacting to what is actually happening in its own state. Like, how do we creatively fund things when we're not 100% directly tied to the church and its coffers?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to do something inventive.
I think it's pretty creative to try to go and get it. And at least the powers that be do somewhat care about trying to get to keep pace with the powers and maintain their status at the top of that conference. You know, does Utah not have a crumble cookie CEO that they can call?
Well, I'm sure they have lots of good money partners. I don't think they're super poor, but they are watching their chief competition,
of course,
backed by the church, just freaking kill it in terms of expenditures. What about the private equity joke? Which is, hey, some of the other stuff private equity has touched, like a lot of our fast food joints and restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what happens. Look at the quality. Look at the cost cutting. Look at the way they treat the customer.
Right.
Adam Hill brought this up yesterday. If you give private equity a big say in it, do they want to cut corners where corners shouldn't be cut? I mean, listen, the Dodgers are run by hedge fund billionaires. They don't seem to operate like they're only about maximizing profits. Like, they still treat the product with a lot of respect and the players, the athletes, with a lot of respect.
Right.
Is there a downside to this?
Oh, I think so. Like, when you talk about, like, the corporatization of things and how not only in terms of how bland it gets, but like you said, it's all just about efficiency and making the most out of the money that you're putting into something. You tend to see the downside in terms of what you're getting back.
Would this be the beginning of the end of programs that are partners with private equity and have an outside voice? Would that mean frankly, it's the absurdity of $50 million buyouts if we get rid of you?
Mm-hmm.
Not going to do it. We'll find a coach and we'll operate in a different market.
Sure.
There are things in college football that do need to be managed from a money standpoint. there is piggishness and wasted money all over the place. So someone coming in and like really examining it and an outside voice like, wait, what are we doing here?
Right.
How many planes are we flying there? What are we doing in terms of the cost? How much are we like, let's trim it up a little bit. So there's this is going to be fascinating. If it goes spreads across the country, it's going to be freaking wild to see now outside voices with real power, especially in college football, where they really haven't had bosses at all. They're allowed to do whatever they freaking want. 5 o'clock hours on the way. We're going to talk some NFL with Miles Simmons from Pro Football Talk and more on the Michigan coaching opening.